Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hello. Nomenclaturally speaking, my name is Wheezy Waiter. Wookiee-ly speaking, we are presented with a unique opportunity to plan for our last words. So to help us all out, I've concocted a list of last words to say. We'll call it the list of last words you could use should you believe that the world is ending tomorrow. And if you believe that, you're a moron. You shouldn't believe that. That's catchy. We'll add that's catchy on the end there, too. Okay, the list. Oh, I haven't written it yet. I gotta write it first. All right, I got it. You could start with the standards. You could say, I love you, or I mostly loved you if there was a time when you didn't love them, or I love you, woo-wee, if they smell really bad. If you're alone, grab a mirror if you love yourself. I know I will, even when I'm not alone. Or you could sing, this is the song that doesn't end. Oh, apparently it doesn't. You could say, it's the apocalypse, if you want to end on a pun. If you liked it, then you should have put some rings on it, is what Saturn would say to Earth. Stand next to someone, turn around, pull your pants down, and say, I sense that my end is near. You could say, snakes. Why did it have to be snakes, if it is in fact snakes? If the world's on fire, you could say, we're fired! Works best if you're Donald Trump. Or if you want to be profound, the great human experiment has finally reached its end. And you could also pull your pants down and touch your butt. You could say, well, I'm not leaving without a flight, and then run and jump off a cliff. If a meteor is plummeting to Earth, you could say, much like with Lance Armstrong, I don't feel bad about taking away your precious metals, what with your relationship with asteroid. Asteroid? Walk around and listen really carefully for someone to say, it's coming right at us, and then say, that was the last thing that she said. Or you could just end with a wink.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. He's seriously, strenuously, and severely green, and it gives him a headache every week. Here he is, Mike Novak.
In the main, right.
She just broke the microphone. Sarah just broke the microphone.
Now. That happened the last show.
Did it?
Yeah. So you're good.
Okay. I'm not going to get in trouble, am I?
Oh, no. Not at all.
Okay.
But hey.
Although it doesn't.
Wow.
I'll step in there.
It's good. We're good.
We're good?
Are we good?
Nice.
Right. Yeah.
Breaker. 1-9.
Okay.
You need a little duct tape.
Just write the check to NewsWeb Corp, and they'll take care of it. Wow, we got a lot of people in the studio here. You know, and it doesn't matter, actually, if you broke the mic, because if you listen to the second part of the show today, all this is useless. This is just...
It's all moot.
It's all a sham.
The Mayans had it right.
The Mayans...
had the year wrong.
They did. And it's going to be this gradual slide into the end of the world and decay. That's why I did that thing at the top of the show, because... Blake Davis is coming in from Illinois Institute for Technology, or Illinois Institute of Technology. Yeah, that's it. Robert Neville would know that. Yeah, you're going to correct me on everything, Robert. Is that what you're going to do today?
Nice job.
That's fine. I mean, he's smarter than I am. I know that. He's an architect. And he has put together a wonderful program at KAM Isaiah Israel, which we will get to in just a second. And the studio is packed. Of course, Sarah Batka is here breaking microphones. Lisa Albrecht is here and will collapse in a heap at some point. If you have the flu, you are so...
I know, I'm hiding
you will,
from
I
everyone.
Will never...
I'm keeping these germs here. I could have a fever. I don't know. We'll see.
Lisa's having a rough last month here.
I want all of you. We've got the disinfecting wipes. I want everybody...
I just cleaned my area to start, and then I'll clean my area to end. But I'm frightened by how dirty this rag is.
Well, that has nothing to do with flu. That's just dirt. That's just dust and stuff that accumulates. This is a hermetically sealed room. How does all this dust get in here?
I don't know.
Come on, you're here for many, many shows, Denny.
Well, we did do the dust show at 5 a.m. this morning.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That happened, the Dustbusters. They came in.
And we have in addition to our special guests for the show segment today, we have another special guest live in studio. Cope Dog is here. Hey. He even gets a ditty.
Yay!
Say hi, Cope.
He said it. Say it again.
Cope.
Hey.
All right. Cope Dog on the Twitter is here. He is. The guy who actually listens to podcasts, I think he's the only one.
Stop.
He what?
I said, oh, stop. There's more people that listen.
There's at least three. So he keeps me up to date. He's the guy who writes me, says, how come podcast isn't up? And you probably noticed it got posted a little late this week. Sometimes that happens. I get busy and then things like that. But as I said in the second hour, Blake Davis, who's the adjunct professor of sustainability and urban agriculture at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Yes. It says so right here in my cheat sheet. He has this thing. Sarah, maybe you should tell us, because you are the one who said we've got to have Blake Davis on the show. Now, Blake was on a year ago talking about the plant on the South Side. Now, we've talked about the plant a number of times on this program, and it is this sustainable building that involves aquaponics, and they just put their anaerobic digester. They're constructing it right now, so they will be energy, not just neutral, they're carbon neutral. It's going to be carbon minus there, because they're taking stuff from other businesses in the area, and they're going to create energy there and run businesses and then close the loop in that. It's an old meat packing plant. And Blake was on last year to talk about that and gave me a tour of the building, which was just marvelous. If you haven't gone, you know, you might want to, because that may be the center of civilization in a couple of decades in Chicago. That might be it. If you listen to Blake, and again, he's talking in the second hour. He's got something that he calls the 50-year survival plan for climate change. Sarah, why is he on the program this morning?
I can't stop talking about his presentation since I went to the Bioneers Conference. Was that back in October?
November. Beginning of November.
Just fascinating. Blake Davis says that... the thing that's going to make people wake up is not the climate. It's going to be economics. When gas hits, you know, $10 a gallon, that's going to be the point where we say, uh-oh.
I think people will go, uh-oh, when it gets to six, actually. Mm-hmm. People will freak out. But
it's so exciting, and he has really
great disturbing,
ideas.
Exciting. And I have to tell you, he sent me his PowerPoint. And now, I haven't even heard him speak, but I read the PowerPoint. And I've been depressed ever since. I'm having all these dystopian fantasies.
Right. I understand. But we need to have, you know, a balance. And his point is, you know, take action now. Do what you can now to prepare yourself. And just his ideas were just fantastic. So
and one of the ideas, and we talked about it on the show very briefly several weeks ago, was books.
Yes.
People who think that the future is the iPad and the Kindle, well, what happens when there's no power?
Yeah, he said, start to amass your collection of printed materials on self-reliance.
Yeah.
And he was giving, like, investment tips.
Yeah, for right now. Now, how to prepare for the end of the world or the end of civilization as we know it. And that sounds extreme. And Lisa's looking skeptical over there, but
no, not skeptical. I'm listening in particular, thinking for those folks who listened to Mighty House yesterday. Rich,
yes, we
Rich,
had a
Rich
little.
Rich Cavill had a little comment, and he was talking about, you know, it's too expensive to fix these problems. Well, I think Blake, I certainly had my opinions, but Blake will probably have some opinions too about, you know, we need to invest in solutions right now, or the cost of where we are headed will be beyond anything we can fathom.
Mm-hmm. And we're getting mighty close to that point.
Indeed.
The tipping point, and indeed, we might have passed it.
Which is why organizations like 350.org and Climate Reality Project and, you know, there's so many great organizations disseminating information. But now's the time to act.
Well, and while we're talking about that, you did a talk at the Wilmette Public Library on Thursday.
Yes.
You and Drew Solomon, and it was wonderful.
Thank you.
You guys did a great job.
Thank you.
And explain what that was about a little bit.
Well, so as I've mentioned on the show before, I had an opportunity to get trained with Al Gore's organization, the Climate Reality Project. And Drew and I did about an hour and a half plus 30 minutes of Q&A. And we've got a slide presentation that kind of goes through the state of where we're at now. And we go through, right now, the organization is focusing on energy solutions. So we go through where we're at today with clean energy and then some things that you can do. We've got to change the dialogue here to, is this a problem, to how do we fix this problem?
And you're going to be doing that in more places in the future.
Yes. In fact, we've got a course lined up for February, and then and on April 18th, we'll be speaking at the Chicago Center for Green Technology.
Well, here's what I'd like to do. I think that the Mike Novak Show should sponsor one of your talks.
We would love
Find a place for it and get our listeners to come by and see you and Drew do your presentation. The only way I know if there's any interest is if you let me know. And let me know on Twitter, let me know on Facebook, send me an email, mike@mikenovak.net. If folks are interested in having, do you tailor it to certain situations?
We do for particular audiences. In this case, we know that Go Green Well Met had talked about many solutions. They have a big no idling campaign, shop local, things like that. So we didn't cover some of those things in our solutions, but we'll talk to the organizers. And my commitment is to speak at least once a month on climate. I know several Sierra Club organizations have contacted us and we're working on getting some dates. Contact me, albrecht.lisa@gmail.com. Or through the Mike Novak Show would probably be best.
Yeah.
And we would love to come and talk to your organization. Anywhere in the Chicagoland area, we'll travel out.
Well, what I'm thinking is, maybe I can partner with an organization, or maybe I just, I know a couple of places where we might be able to set this up, right, and just get a bunch of our listeners in there.
That'd be great.
And
whether it's your local library or church or school or wherever.
Or U of I Extension.
Or U of I Extension.
Have you guys got a place
out
we could do this?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we do it through Extension? That
okay.
just makes total sense. Why don't you investigate that, Sarah?
Done.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. So send me a tweet, send me a Facebook post. Let me know if you'd be interested in being part of the Climate Reality Project presentation that Lisa Albrecht and Drew Solomon do. It's fascinating and also disturbing when you see where we are and where we should be. And again, in the second hour, Blake Davis will be here to talk about that. The final two things before we get to our guests here, and that is on my website, MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net. When you go there today, you will see a picture of Kathy Cummings. We've been talking about Kathy Cummings and her garden, native plant garden, that got fined, that got ticketed in October, a $640 fine, which she is appealing. And a lot of you have voiced your help on this, have said that you would help with it. There's a picture of her promoting the Mike Novak Show.
How cute is that?
Isn't that amazing? I did, folks, I have to tell you, I did not tell her to do that. She put, you know, maybe they'll give me a ticket now for the sign. Who knows? and she put the sign in her front yard on the parkway. Catch the Mike Novak Show Sunday, 9 to 11 a.m., 8:20 a.m. She's got all the frequencies, 8:20 a.m., 92.7 north, 92.59. It's actually just 92.5 west and 99.9 FM south. Kathy, that's very sweet. I think everybody should put signs on their lawn. It says, and then their front yards. It says, listen to the Mike Novak Show. So appreciate that. And the other thing I want to tell you, if you scroll down, you'll see a really cool thing that's being done for the Chicago Recycling Coalition, which I'm president of, pro bono, just to let you know that we're having this beer dinner at DMK Burger Bar. DMK Burger Bar and Oscar Blues Brewery have combined to put together, you know, the Beer Revolution guys would really appreciate this. I hope they saw it. I got to talk to them about that. Four beers, four courses. There's one tomorrow night, 9 p.m. at DMK, 2954 North Sheffield. You can click on that. I've got it posted on Facebook. I've got it posted on Twitter. And the proceeds of these two dinners, there's one tomorrow night and one on the 28th of January, both Mondays, both 9 p.m. It goes to the Chicago Recycling Coalition, which thank you guys for that.
How fabulous. What a great event.
And I guess they're really close to selling out already. So here's what you do. Try to make a reservation so then when they hear the response, they'll say, well, we have to do another dinner sometime in January for this. Because January is our month. They gave us January. And so that's coming up. And my thanks to DMK Burger Bar and Oscar Blues Brewery for doing this. This is just a wonderful thing. So that's all on the homepage of The Mike Novak Show, MikeNovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you're going to see information about a congregation called KAM Isaiah Israel. Once again, Robert Neville, who is with the congregation, is here in the studio. How you doing, Robert?
Fine, Mike. How are you?
Wonderful. Gloria Needleman is back again. You were last here, I think, 2010.
It was a while
ago. That seems
the
like
old studio.
Yeah, in the old. That's right.
Right.
In the old studio.
When you used to be south, and it was easy to get there.
Well, easy to get there for some people. Right. That's true because KAM is in Hyde Park.
Right.
So, although Robert
Northsider,
Northsider. So we have a conflict here. But it's great to have you guys back here, and they're here for a couple of reasons. One is that especially next week they are having their MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend program in celebration of the life and work of Martin Luther King Jr. This is the fourth year.
It's correct. We started it, I think the first year was 2010. We started our program in 2009, and the first MLK weekend was January of 2010.
I'm so glad that I got on board early in on what you guys were doing.
You were from the beginning, Mike. You've been a marvelous supporter of our program from the get-go, and
well,
we appreciate that.
It didn't take long to figure out that you guys were the real deal. I mean, I don't know if you've been to the website, but my headline is Food Justice KAM Isaiah Israel Walks the Walk, and you guys do. I'm just so impressed with what you've done. And let me say at the outset, there are a lot of organizations in the city, a lot of community gardens, a lot of people who are trying to make sustainability happen, who are growing food, who are teaching people to grow food. You can't cover all of them. But when you latch on to or you find somebody that does it right, you latch on to them, which is what I've done. And it's always an honor to have you here in the studio. And it's always an honor to go down there and see your garden. And we've got photos on the website on this week's show of your harvest from last year. And we'll get to the Food Justice Weekend in a second. But one of the things I like about what you're doing is you've reached out to other congregations and not necessarily Jewish.
Correct.
In fact, a lot of Christian congregations or several Christian congregations.
Right.
And the newest one last year was Church of St. Paul and the Redeemer.
That's correct. You know, Mike, before we get started, I wanted to say that in this conversation that was going on at the beginning of the show, the overwhelmingness of the what some people think the impending doom of climate change. And it is an our responsibility not to solve the problem immediately. And I think this should be of help to the general audience. It's not to solve the problem immediately, but to work on it and to get started on it. We can't solve the problem tomorrow. We can't grow enough food in the South Side to feed everyone in the South Side. We can't teach enough people how to grow their own food, but we have to get started in the work. And I think that takes a little bit of the heat off of each and every one of us, know that we can't solve the problem tomorrow, but we can get started on it.
Well, if everybody were working on the project, we wouldn't have this problem.
Right.
Unfortunately, there are too many people working against us. Now it's and I'm looking at the bigger picture. When I think of Washington, I just throw my hands in the air and I think, well, how is it that our elected representatives are the most clueless among us? I don't understand why that is.
Yeah, I don't know if they're clueless or that they just have competing interests. They may very well know that.
Well, if the competing interests win, then they're clueless.
Yeah.
You know, that you could make that argument every single time that if people throw money at you and you look at the other side and there's the end of the world and you choose the money, you're clueless.
Yeah.
Well, and I think what's really important, though, is to make sure that the only voice that they hear is not on the denial side, but that they hear our voices. You know, it's really important to reach out to your senators, to your representatives, both at a state and national level, because if they don't hear you, they don't know your opinion. And I can't speak strongly enough to. We have to be the loudest ones they hear, and that's what will create change.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, they have so many paid lobbyists there that those are the voices that get recognized. So we've got to be heard.
And there's this feeling of helplessness that people – I mean, I have a radio show, and I feel helpless. I sit here, and I feel helpless.
But in addition to being a loud voice, we feel it important to – and I think that is very important – but also to be large producers. Mm-hmm. And that if we can grow a certain tonnage of food, then we can ask people – to help us grow more.
Right.
And it puts you in a position when you do the ask rather than to demand, but to say, we have been working for change. This is what we have accomplished. Can you help us accomplish more? Rather than just wag a finger or write a letter and say we demand change, but to be part of that change and then to ask for help.
Absolutely. And I think, Robert, when you say, you know, not one of us can solve this problem, but just do the little part you can, because all those little parts add up to something big. And so, you know, whether it's growing your own food or whether it's, you know, choosing clean energy or whether it's taking the bus instead of driving, every little thing matters. And find the things in your life that you can control and work on those.
And you are, as I said, in this regard, already doing it. You are already walking the walk. Tell me about working with the Church of St. Paul and the Redeemer.
Right. That's an example. We have, as Mike, as you well know, set up 4 years ago our program as a replicable model. We know that, again, that we cannot grow enough food to help feed all those in need in the South Side. But if we can demonstrate in our tight urban site how you can transform an unproductive landscape into a serious producer of food, then we can go to other congregations and say, this is what we have done. You have a similar setup. Can we help you do that at your congregation? And so 3 years ago, we built a food producing garden outside the hot meal program at Kenwood United Church of Christ. And about a year ago, we approached St. Paul and the Redeemer at 50th and Dorchester, about four blocks east of our congregation, and ask them if they'd like to join in our efforts and transform their lawn, their ornamental lawn, into an ornamental food-producing garden.
And I love that concept. Let's take the lawn. Let's my slogan about lawns: when in doubt, rip it out. And this is a perfect case. Gloria, were you going to jump in here?
Oh, I would jump in at any point. I just want you to know that. We did an interfaith garden, and we set up with the idea that we would involve people from all over. And our workforce at any one of the three gardens is a picture of the United Nations. It's wonderful to see. We go from little kids of one color to older people of another color to people in between, and everybody gets dirty fingernails and gets down and watches these little tiny seeds feed people. It's wonderful. We love it.
It absolutely is. That's Gloria Needleman and Robert Neville are both here. They're KAM, Isaiah Israel Congregation members. So you have this model that I love, because one of the things I've learned in the past couple of years is that the perfect place to practice sustainability and local food production is churches. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, look what they have. They usually have property. Usually it's not being used except to plant lawns and use. They often have, the older ones especially, have kitchens in the basement that are underused, right. Underutilized. Right. They have congregations. They have the people.
The workforce. Right.
The workforce. Then this is the perfect storm to get these organizations together and create sustainability and a sustainable process where you can feed your own people.
And a significant amount of food relief in this country takes place at houses of worship. It's not a surprise that 4 of the 6 regular recipients of our harvest are affiliated with a church or a house of worship. It is, Mike, another way to look at it is that the buildings, the land use model for a house of worship, a sacred space, the land use model is basically a sacred space sitting in a sea of grass. The building is sacred, but the lawn, the site, is typically profane. It is not thought of and designed and maintained and treated in the same way as the building itself. It is generally the lawn an afterthought. It is the margin around which this sacred building sits. And so what we're trying to do is show that the site itself is also a sacred space, and meaning that it can rise above its the mundane growing of a lawn and actually turn into an opportunity to feed people.
And that's what you've done with several congregations. Now, the interesting point, though, is sustainability is not just the materials you use in the soil and on the property and on the land and the seeds. It's the people.
Right.
And part of being a sustainable model is being able to sustain the workforce to keep those gardens going. And, you know, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I know that you're dealing with that issue right now, aren't you?
Right. You and I have talked about this before, that sustaining a workforce is a key component to the sustainability. And our program has, in a way, grown faster than we thought it would have. And in the 4 years, we have become one of, if not the largest grower and donor of food in Chicago.
How much food have you donated? And last year was...
Last year was 4,500 pounds, 2.25 ton.
That you grew on site?
We grew at Kenwood United Church of Christ, at St. Paul and the Redeemer, at KM Isaiah Israel, and the gleaning that we do at the community gardens.
And the White Rock Gleaning Program is one of the coolest things you do, which is you have people put cairns. We learned about cairns, remember, a few weeks ago?
Well, one piece of a cairn.
One piece of a cairn. But these white rocks,
yes,
that people use as a symbol to say, we have extra produce, please come and take it.
Yes, it indicates that if they have for whatever reason, abandoned their plot or are not available to tend their plots at these community gardens, that they signify to us that at a certain time, we can harvest those plots and deliver that food to a nearby shelter. And that's a significant amount of food in of itself.
All right, so 2.5 tons. This is one congregation, actually three if you add it all up, but all working together. Imagine all the congregations in the city of Chicago doing that. Right. There would be no hunger. It would be eliminated, basically. That's a lot of food.
Right.
So this is my plea to everybody to get involved. See, so if I had people say, well, I don't know how to do it, can I talk to Robert? Would you be available for that?
Well, that's...
I know you have a real career.
And now we invite them to the weekend.
Right.
That's the segue to the weekend.
Absolutely.
It's an answer. There are several answers to that question. First, of course, we don't like to say no to anyone. And we have set up our program so that we can help folks. We do put on this Martin Luther King Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend in mid-January in order to do this each year. You know, after 10 months, 2 weeks of idleness on our farmer's part, and they need some activity. And so we put on this weekend. And that's part of it. And that also will lead, Mike, if you want, into the discussion of sustainability in the workforce, because we cannot, unfortunately, with our volunteer crews, help set up gardens at all the congregations as much as we'd like to throughout the city. We are looking continuously for partners to do that. But we are at a point in our program where we have to decide whether we are going to become a standalone program or whether we are going to continue on working through the Social Justice Committee of KMIZ Israel.
I need to break here, but does it at some point become a matter of whether it needs to be there needs to be a financial model as well, that you need to pay people to do this?
That's correct. I think that's where we've come to. And we can
Interesting.
Happy to talk about that after the break. And it ties in really with the theme for this year's Martin Luther King weekend, which I'd probably need
All
to
right.
explain.
And I'm hoping there's something special going up on Saturday on the weekend, and I have this idea that maybe I can be the show that breaks the news about part of that. But you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
We do.
I do. We'll see.
I don't think he's going to.
Did you bring a pry bar in?
Hey, can I just throw in real quick, because I don't think it was mentioned that this is free and open to the public. Free.
Correct. Yes.
Free,
the entire
free,
weekend is free
so,
of charge.
We'll be telling you about it in just a second. It's free of charge. You can come by. They're going to, I'll tease this, they're going to plan, design a community garden right there on Saturday that is going to be put to use immediately this year, right?
Well,
we
I mean, yeah, we'll get to it. Like everything, it's quite complicated.
Okay. That is Robert Neville and Gloria Needleman are both here from KAMIZ Israel. We'll be back and tell you about the MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend. So here we are, 13 days into the new year. How many resolutions have you already broken? Here's one that I advise you keep, even if you haven't done it yet. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. That way you won't be a complete loser. No, wait. I'm not saying you're a loser. I'm just saying that if you want a subscription, you do want it so you can get some help in your garden, you loser. I don't know why I keep saying that. Anyway, the January-February issue, as usual, is chock full of great advice. A lot of lawns. Some of you like your lawns. I'd say, you know, go half with a lawn, half with a vegetable garden. And anyway, if you want that to look nice, there's a great article about how to bring it back to life in 2013. You say your yard is on a slope and it's impossible to grow anything there. Au contraire, mes losers. There's a story that will show you how to get those plants established so they won't wash down into the ditch. Of course, if you get the magazine, you have to put up with the loser who writes the column on the inside back page. Hey, who wrote this? Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go ahead, do it right now. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. I don't think operators are standing by to take your calls, but I'll bet you could leave a message. So maybe you just want to go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees about next spring. Yes, here we go. We are in the middle of winter. Sometimes it feels like spring, and sometimes it feels like winter, like today. There was ice out there, some slippery spots, so be careful. But, you know, next spring might bring some surprises. Many trees have been through droughts and floods and excessive heat in the past several years. I'm talking years, yes, not just last year. Those conditions often affect trees a couple of years down the road. So if your tree lost its leaves early in 2012 or you saw some die back, keep an eye on your tree as it leafs out in the spring. And anytime temperatures are mild during this winter and the ground is not frozen, It, you know, we got a little freeze now, but it's not particularly frozen. But when it does warm up, take some time to thoroughly water your trees, the equivalent of 1 inch every 3 weeks or so, especially if they've been in the ground less than a couple of years. And whether you want to make sure your trees are surviving harsh conditions, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Yeah, we might as well do some end-of-the-world music here. I think that's going to be our theme all morning long. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, in the studio with me. Boy, I got a ton of people, but I especially welcome Robert Neville and Gloria Needleman from KAM Isaiah Israel. Next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the 2013 Martin Luther King Junior Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend. So where did we leave that conversation? We went, let's get into that about what you plan to do. You know, for folks, I was talking a second ago about folks who want to know how to do this, especially I would put the word out to people in congregations who have a sense of the urgency and how important it is to get this done. So what will they learn at the conference?
Well, one of the ways that we are able to help to leverage our workforce is to put on this weekend. And so Friday night there is a Shabbat service, and our keynote speaker is a woman from Los Angeles, Devorah Bross, who started an organization in Los Angeles that does similar work to what we do here in Chicago, interfaith work in food justice. Then Saturday afternoon, well, let's skip Saturday afternoon for a moment and go into Sunday. Sunday we have 16 workshops on practical learning. So you can come and learn about beekeeping or cheese making or how to cook a healthy meal or how to do proper soil amendments, that sort of thing. Saturday afternoon is really the opportunity that we have this year to help a great number of people in designing food-producing gardens. And so what we are probably once or twice a week are receive a call from an organization that wants us to help them start a food-producing garden. In July or August of this past year, we started taking food to a shelter for men about in Washington Park, and they have potentially access to a half-acre site adjacent to their shelter. And they were looking to us to potentially help them develop that site so that they could use that both to grow their own food and as a place for the people who are staying in the shelter to learn a skill. And growing their own food, of course, is ultimately the greatest way that we can help them. We can take them food, which we do, which is of help, but the highest form, really, of charity, if I can use that word, probably not a politically correct word, but the highest form is to teach someone else how to do that work for themselves. And that's, you and I have talked about that in years past.
Yeah, I busted you before because, you know, here you are. That's New Testament stuff.
Well, it's also
it came from us. We started.
Oh, you guys started it? Okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I thought the other stuff was all Sturm und Drang, you know.
Yeah, no, it's what do they say? It's all good. It's there's but it's it is ultimately the best that we can do.
Now, wait a second. I was doing stuff here. Did you just reveal?
I wouldn't do that when you were doing something else. No, I didn't reveal it. You want to know the site, you mean?
Yes.
I did not. I got you close. I got you.
Okay, you're
in the neighborhood.
It's closer, not as close as GPS, not within the three yards of.
Because the point of this is that the site has not been revealed that they're going to design the. Well, I mean, that you're going to bring the dimensions of it.
Well, actually, I'll talk a little bit more, but I'll talk around the edges of it. So there's a half acre site within about a mile of our gardens, and what we plan to do is what we call a community design workshop, food security and sustainable urban farming, a case study. And so we will, we've invited five terrific farm managers, really stellar group from Chicago, Ken Dunn, you all know, Michael Thompson, Kit Healy, Mitch Yasau from South Bend, Ilan Margolis from Geneva, Illinois, pushing the envelope farm. And I will sort of moderate that. And we will make an 8-foot by 12-foot drawing in front of the audience with audience participation, and we will design. It's a community design workshop. We will design this half-acre farm, get it started in 2 hours, and so that at the end of that session, there will be a layout of what we hope to be a sustainable food-producing urban farm, half-acre, for this this shelter for men that they can use both to grow food and to teach new skills. Now, that does not mean that the end of at 6 o'clock on Saturday, before the pizza and beer comes out, it does not mean that they will be able to the next day start building this urban farm. This will require fundraising. This will require support from the city. This will require a lot more work. But it is our way of being able to get them started on the process. Get this conceptual design, what you might think of as a napkin sketch on steroids, get them started on building this farm.
But it's so exciting, the idea that folks can come and see how this is done with real experts, people who have boots on the ground and know what they're talking about.
Right, so that even if this does not get built right away, those people who are in attendance, if they have their own half acre or quarter acre or smaller, if they're thinking about starting a food producing garden at their congregation in their backyard, they can see how, as you say, people who really have great experience in doing this, how they actually lay it out. We will go through everything from sun angles to irrigation, to access, truck access for dropping off compost, row cropping, notions of permaculture, fruit tree planting. It'll all be covered in those 2 hours. It'll be sort of like it'll be a speed design, but it will move through.
I love the idea. I just think that's just fabulous. And so people need to take advantage of it. So if they want to register for this conference, they can do a couple of things. They can go to my website, mikenovak.net. There's a link if in the second paragraph where it says MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend Program. You can click on that and get all the information. How else could they get involved?
Well, the registration is recommended but not required. Again, as Lisa points out, the entire weekend is free of charge and open to the public, and that includes a reception after the Saturday afternoon community design workshop, and it includes lunch on Sunday. But we recommend that people go to kamii.org or to Mike's website or wherever they can access the kamii.org site and sign up, just to make sure that they don't get frozen out of one of the workshops on Sunday, especially the cooking workshops. Urban Worm Girl is a very popular work.
It's time for me to get Urban Worm Girl back on the show. Yeah. It's been a while.
They're great. And so the idea is if you sign up, the only reason is to make sure that if the room fills up on Sunday that you have a seat. But you can just show up on Sunday. We're at Hyde Park Boulevard in Greenwood.
You can show up on Saturday too, right?
Show up on Friday night, Saturday.
Yeah, okay.
All of it. And just show up and join us. And everyone is welcome. We put this on for our community. And this year we have people coming from California, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Indiana.
Well, it's just fabulous, and it's always an honor to have Gloria.
I just wanted to say that maybe we have the most secure garden ever because we're directly across the street from the president's house.
Well, that's the point I was going to make.
This is very important because people are going to be kind of frightened when they see the blockades that say don't enter. Well, but we expect you to enter, and security will know that you're coming. And we have a parking lot to the north of our building, uh-huh. And you come in from 50th Street over to Greenwood, one block west, or you park anywhere else in the neighborhood and walk in. No cameras, No cameras at the Obama house.
Don't think you're going to sneak a shot of Obama's house. Okay, it ain't going to happen. I've seen the Secret Service there. Okay?
They're wonderful. My favorite story is we have a nursery school, and one of our little children came to a security man and said, "You help people, don't you?" And the guy said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, would you tie my shoes?" And he did.
That's so sweet.
Isn't that dear?
That's not what they did for me.
Well, you're not as cute as a three-year-old.
They said, "Get out of here." Yeah, I had to get Robert. He said, "Robert, the Secret Service guy is looking at me funny. I don't think he wants me here." Folks, don't try to sneak around behind the Obama house either. Don't go to the alley because they know you're doing that, all right? Just go into KAM Isaiah Israel and attend the conference. I'm glad you brought that up, Gloria, because I was going to ask that question, how you deal with it. I have to let you go, unfortunately. A couple of quick things on Twitter here. I got a wonderful tweet from Zan and talking about people who are helping out. Houses of Worship, she writes, can contact at Peterson Garden, the Peterson Garden Project, which is another wonderful project in the city. They have a program called Grow How. She says it's trademarked. Get it? And so, Peterson, if you need to contact, just Google Peterson Garden Project. The other thing is Mud Baron tweeted, this is a quote from Martin Luther King. "You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love." I think that sort of puts things in perspective. Robert and Gloria, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you in the studio. And I'm hoping I can make it for that design thing. And that's at 4 o'clock, right?
4 o'clock on Saturday, the 19th of January, my parents' 66th anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what a great anniversary. And I hope it's packed. And, folks, you should all go down there. Rick DeMaio weather is coming up in 90 seconds.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Oh, yeah. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Time to go to the meteorologist in charge of meteorology. It's Rick DeMaio. Hey, Rick, how did the conference go?
You know what, Mike? The conference was fantastic. In fact, it was actually daunting to some extent. The Austin Convention Center is one of the largest buildings I've ever been in. I think we had almost 5,000 attendees there, and when I got to present my talk on Tuesday, I was preceded by a professor from the University of Reading in the UK. I'm not too sure exactly where that is. But then a couple of people from NCAR, which is out in Boulder. And then after that, a guy by the name of Todd Lane. He's a meteorologist, professor extraordinary, researcher from the University of Melbourne down in Australia. Obviously, we were talking a little bit about the heat. and then a couple of people from China. So it was quite the international array of professors and researchers that I was kind of squished in between, and it was a little bit overwhelming at times. It was probably one of the more interesting set of discussions I've been to, because there was a lot of talk about, you know, Hurricane Sandy, whether to call it a superstorm, and also, you know, kind of running back and forth between whether you want to go to a climate change conference, because what they do is at this annual AMS conference, it's the American Meteorological Society, there's about 18 other, you know, symposium and sub-conferences that take place at the same time. So it's kind of funny when you get into a room that has a, you know, four or five talks set up, and immediately after the first talk begins, if it starts boring, people start opening up their little journal that they have in front of them and seeing where they want to run to next. It's kind of funny, but, you know, not everybody, even though you're presenting, you know, great research, presents it in a way that's interesting and you know, grabs your attention. So it was there was a lot of great things that came out of it all in all.
I always tell people giving talks, because I do a lot of talks, don't try to win over everybody in the audience, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing about it is, and you've probably seen this as well, the people don't want to put down their phones, they don't want to put down their computers, and they actually even have it in the, you know, in the you know, itinerary, you know, be respectful of the people and, you know, who are talking. If you're going to be on your computer checking email or, you know, updating something, sit in the back of the room. And I was amazed and sometimes appalled at the fact that in the first two rows, people just open up their laptops and are not even paying attention to the person who's talking. They're just, you know, filing away emails or looking at stuff. And you know, I think the problem is worldwide, and it just doesn't have to do with students who are getting bored. It has to do with just about anybody. You know, we're married to these phones and computers, I think, more than we've ever been. And I think some of it is good, and, you know, some of it not so good.
Well, we might not be married to them as long as you think. I don't know where you are, Rick, but if you get a chance to listen to the second hour today, I think you're going to, in fact, you're welcome to call in if you sure want. We have Blake Davis from IIT here, and he's got his 50-year survival plan for climate change, and he's dead serious. He's as serious as, you know, 390 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, okay?
Well, I think one of the more interesting talks was what would happen if a massive solar flare. There was this one town hall meeting on our active sun, and when the guy said, this is what would happen if a solar flare interrupted all of our communication satellites, and at that point, everybody kind of looked up. I thought everybody was like, okay, what do I have to do? What do I have to back myself up with if my phone all of a sudden, you know, goes out? But one of the more, I think, interesting discussions, Mike, was on Monday night. There was a town hall meeting on how the public responded to the watches and the warnings for Hurricane Sandy. How well did the National Hurricane Center do? How well did the National Weather Service do? That's more the local part of it. What did the Weather Channel do differently? How did the FEMA? And I had a very interesting discussion with Max Mayfield. I don't know if this name rings a bell, but Max Mayfield was the director of the National Hurricane Center when Hurricane Katrina roared through the Gulf of Mexico and obviously into New Orleans. And we talked for almost 15 minutes, and he works for a local station now down in the Miami area. And I said, you know, what did we do right and what did we do wrong? And he basically came out and said that, you know, the problem was that, you know, the Hurricane Center basically dropped the fact that it was a hurricane and started calling it a post-hurricane or a non-tropical storm. And I think maybe people let their guard down a little bit, and they kind of put all the emphasis on, you know, the National Weather Service kind of handling that part of it. And at the same time, he said, you know, we still have to do a better job of training the local emergency managers. And then I kind of talked a little bit about, you know, his discussions with the president, and back then it was George Bush, obviously, and also Mike Brown of FEMA. And, you know, he said, I told those guys this was going to be one of the worst things that was ever going to happen to New Orleans, and it was a bunch of different organizations just not realizing, you know, how bad this situation was. And so it was kind of neat that you can actually sit there and eat a muffin and have a cup of coffee and talk with the National Hurricane Center director from a couple of years ago. So candidly about something that was, you know, such a national catastrophe. I think that's one of the great things about these conferences.
And as you can see in the world, we don't have a whole lot of time. We got about 2 minutes, 3 minutes here. This has been a crazy weather week all over the planet. I mean, you could go with the Australia. You could talk, you know, you've got excessive heat in Australia. You've got temperatures down to minus 50 in Russia.
Right,
you've got
right,
snow
right,
in Jerusalem. It's just insane.
Yeah, and that was another thing. I know I wish we had more time for this. That was another thing that was talked about was this high degree of variability that we're seeing. And this is becoming more and more of the norm when you have, you know, like, for instance, today it's going to be a high of 48 in Phoenix and a high of 52 in Boston, you know, in New England where they're playing football. So, you know, what's wrong with that picture? We didn't get an inch of snow last night in Chicago, and we're not going to get an inch of snow all week. So we're going to eventually break the record for the latest ever of an inch of snow here. So, yeah, while it was appearing to get cold here, everybody kept talking about how the U.S. numerical models that go out 7 to 10 days are still somewhat inferior to the European models. And we were talking about how their computing power is a little bit better than ours. So there was a lot of discussion. Almost at one point by day four, your head was kind of spinning. So anyway, in short, you know, we have a lot of little bit of patchy freezing rain and drizzle that kind of coated the area. So if you haven't been outside yet, you don't want to do one of those things where you take the first step and you go, whoa, and you kind of do a little bit of a slip back. But mid-20s today, it'll clear out tomorrow. We'll see sunshine, mid-20s on Monday, and then a gradual warm-up, probably near 30 Wednesday, low 30s Thursday and Friday, and the next best chance of snow goes north of us through Wisconsin and Michigan next Thursday, or at least next Friday and Saturday. So this is going to be a very, very inactive week. And then maybe next week we can talk more about the long-range effects of drought and also how it actually enhances rainfall across the northern plains. I attended a very interesting discussion about that as well, Mike.
Wow. You've got a lot. Okay, let's definitely do that next week.
No problem.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Rick DeMaio, weather, always on the Mike Novak Show, round about 9:45. Blake Davis, the harbinger of doom, has entered the studio. We've got
good morning, Mike.
But you're smiling, you know? He's a jovial guy. He seems like a very friendly guy until he...
Hey, I have a good attitude for the end.
Assuming that it's going to come. And I really do hope Rick listens to this because second hour on the Mike Novak Show, Blake Davis is here. He's got his 50-year survival plan for climate change. It's a talk he did at Bioneers, and Sarah saw it, and she said, oh, you have to have him on the show. You just have to do that. But I didn't sleep well last night. This is all I got to tell you. Okay, that's and I might not for the next couple of weeks. So
well, you know how hard it is following that notorious climate denier, Rick DeMaio.
Yeah, we'll get into that next hour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
The greatest man alive. But now I'm a man. Way past 21. I want you to believe me, baby. I have lots of fun.
I love it because Denny Sheeter is the guy that no matter what instrument you bring to the table, he's got an air version of it in the booth there.
Yeah, right. You saw some air monica right there.
Air monica.
Air harmonica.
welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, also streaming worldwide on the worldwide internets, on the worldwide something or other that's out there. And you can also pick it up on a podcast if you don't hear this live. But you can find the the link to the live stream at MikeNovak.net. You can also go to Chicago's Progressive Talk.com. And in the studio, I'm very pleased to have Blake Davis once again.
Once again, yes.
Yeah, it was almost exactly a year ago that you were here to talk about the plant.
Yes.
And what's going on there. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, that will soon be the center of civilization, right?
Possibly. we actually have broken ground for our anaerobic digester.
Yeah, I had the guys... Oh, what's the name of the company that makes that?
Eisenman.
Eisenman. I had a couple of Eisenman guys on several weeks ago. It's really just amazing stuff.
For listeners that don't know, an anaerobic digester is a...
It's kind of a mechanical stomach that will take organic material, waste organic material, and turn it into biogas, which is primarily methane, and it essentially can replace natural gas. So we're taking waste and we're turning it into the equivalent of natural gas and using it to run a combined heat and power system. So we'll get all of our electricity, all of our heat, all of our cooling from that system.
So why wouldn't we just build a bunch of those all across the country and stop this fracking nonsense?
Great idea.
All right, let's do it. Where do I invest? You're talking about you're going to have to make smart investments in the next few years.
Well, we're one of the first in the city, and we're one of the first in the state, primarily for energy production. So hopefully our good example will actually lead other people to install these kind of units.
Why did you go with Eisenman? I know they've done it worldwide, but this is their first one in the United States.
It is the first one in the United States, but they've probably done about 100 in Europe for the purpose of energy. We're using a program that's from the state of Illinois that actually funds these, but almost all of them are downstate, and they're all basically being used as sewage treatment for contained animal feeding operations. So because we're trying to use it for energy, we wanted to go with a company that actually has some experience in designing and building them for energy production.
Confined animal feeding operations aren't going to talk about using these things as an excuse for building those facilities, are they?
They may, but the problem is that if you have 50 pigs, you make a little manure pile and everybody's fine with it. When you have 20,000 pigs, everybody in three counties knows you're there if you don't do something specific. So so these have been seen as pretty much a sewage treatment option for these big animal feeding operations. Because it's all in a contained thing, there's not much odor, there's not much other problems from these.
Can they handle that kind of capacity?
Yep, big enough. Yeah, they're pretty much scalable. They started in India as very small units for household size things, and now they're, you know, we're doing one that will divert 32 tons a day of waste from the waste stream.
Blake Davis is the adjunct professor of sustainability and urban agriculture at the Illinois Institute of Technology. There's more to that title, but is that good enough for you?
Yes, that's fine.
he's got this title that goes on for a couple of paragraphs, but that's the one we'll go with. I want to read you something that I put together. If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, as kind of an introduction to what we're going to talk about here this morning. In this past week, this is just this past week, folks. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, officially announced that 2012 was the warmest year on record in the lower 48 states. In some parts of Australia, drivers could not pump gas because it was vaporizing in the heat. Meteorologists were forced to come up with a new color for their weather maps to account for temperatures above 122 degrees Fahrenheit. The USDA declared much of the central and southern wheat belt a natural disaster area due to persistent drought that imperils this year's winter wheat harvest. It's been so dry around Chicago, this week's rains notwithstanding, that the Morton Arboretum has been watering its trees to make sure they come out of the winter healthy. Traffic lights recently stopped working in the city of Yakutsk, and as actual temperatures in Russia plummeted to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. We haven't had a snow event of at least 1 inch for more than 300 days, but Jerusalem got 6 inches of snow on Thursday. Russian radio declared that the world climate has gone mad. And the kicker, The draft third national climate assessment says that climate change is here, basically, in their report, and that the United States should prepare itself for increasingly threatened infrastructure, water supplies, crops, and shorelines. That's all in 1 week. This past week. I mean, this is after I booked you weeks and weeks ago to do this. Okay? So this is kind of a lead-in to what you presented at Bioneers, which is called the 50-Year Survival Plan for Climate Change. So the things I've read, they just play right into what you're saying.
Absolutely. All true. The reason I actually came up with the idea for the 50-Year Survival Plan was that I read a lot since I'm a college professor, and I've read you know, dozens of books that 200 pages of, you know, this is the problem, it's all laid out very well, and then there's 10 pages at the end that essentially say, if I was God, this is what I would get the Congress to do and the president to do and business to do, and it's not a realistic it's not a realistic plan for how to deal with that, because you're not going to get the government to pass a carbon tax, and you're not going to get them to make regulations that allow people to drive only a certain amount. And so we have these climate action plans that say we need to reduce the amount of carbon emissions by 80%, which basically means we have to reduce the amount of fossil fuels that we burn by 80%. And there is no plan on doing that. That is a rational goal based on the facts, but there's no plan on how to get there. And I think we make a couple assumptions about climate change that allow us to rationalize not doing anything. And I'll summarize those as, one, we think that it will happen sometime in the distant future. Two, that it will happen gradually and we'll get lots of warning about it coming. We can stop it anytime that we want to once we get the will to do it. And the solution requires agreement between governments, businesses, and any individual action won't make any difference. And I disagree with these on factual basis. And I also think they don't provide much in the way of direction for an individual citizen on what to do. So I'm trying to come up with a plan that actually circumvents all of those rationalizations and allows individuals to start doing something immediately. The basic reason I think the assumptions are false is that we have underestimated the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that would cause irreversible damage to the environment. Governments are routinely still looking at 400 parts per or 450 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere as being safe targets to look at. The other thing is we've overestimated our ability to reduce our use of fossil fuels, and therefore we're not able to achieve any of these targets that we need as benchmarks to get to this 80% reduction. So since we had the Kyoto Treaty, we're actually emitting 30% more carbon dioxide.
Which we didn't sign on to, by the way.
Which we didn't even sign on to, but the rest of the world did, and we're still using 30% more carbon dioxide, emitting 30% more carbon dioxide than we did. The other thing is that the target year, which was 1990, which we were supposed to be stabilizing our emissions at, we're 45% more emissions than that 1990 target date. So we're using energy more efficiently, but we're actually also using about 25% more of it than we did in 1970.
When you say we're using energy more efficiently, we know that to some degree the United States is. You know, I roll my eyes when I say that. We know Germany is. We know there are certain countries. But there's a lot of countries that are just getting into, you know,
the party's just getting started.
Right.
In India and China and Indonesia and Mexico and Russia and yes.
And I sent Lisa, an article the other week that I got sent about coal in the United States where, yeah, we're reducing our coal use here, but we still mine it and we send it all over the world.
Right.
So the net effect is that coal burning increases throughout the world.
Right. And the reason that we're primarily bringing the XL pipeline down is to try to export more Canadian oil to the rest of the world. So.
And one of the filthiest methods of extracting oil ever.
Shale oil and all of that stuff is bad. Fracking is bad. And it probably has a limited lifespan. We say lots and lots of it, but we're using lots and lots of natural gas to get all of these things out of the ground. So we're kind of saying, well, that's a throwaway. Well, so we have a little bit now, but that doesn't make it a throwaway because we're going to need it in the future.
So I don't even know where to start here. I mean, I looked at and I appreciate you sending me the PowerPoint and Lisa and Sarah. And I'll tell you what, my listeners, 773-763-9278, I'd welcome your phone calls about this and where we're going and why we're here. But part of the reason I love the idea that you say we have to bypass what are perceived as current solutions because they're just not adequate. I mean, you look at
they're not realistic, and I don't even think they follow sort of any normal pattern that we've ever seen action being taken. So kind of the 350.org people are saying, well, what we need is a mass movement like the civil rights movement, like the peace movement. And I was involved in both of those. And the problem is that all of us are still responsible. None of us have clean hands in this. So if the person's not driving, not using fossil fuels to heat their house, you know, then they can become part of the moral mass movement. But everybody is using all of these things every day. So they're all part of the problem. And I just don't find it plausible that we're going to, you know, be able to use those as a way of organizing people to make changes.
Well, Lisa was talking earlier about the little things you do in life to make a difference, and that has always been the meme of the environmental movement, is that you're not going to be able to walk down the road and shut off that coal burning plant, but you can recycle. You can drive less. You can compost. Obviously, you're all in favor of that. You're doing the anaerobic digester at the plant. There are just all kinds of different little things you can do. Are you saying that's not enough?
I don't think that's enough. The way I look at it, this is like we're going to save 5%. So this is like we're getting 5% off on buying the Gucci bag. You still have to figure out if that's going to work in your budget. The 5% isn't going to make any difference. We're talking about Americans needing probably to cut their fossil fuel use and their CO2 emissions by, you know, maybe a factor of 10 to get to the levels that will actually be sustainable on Earth. So we're not doing that with the 5 or 10% that you're saving by, you know, changing your light bulbs out and doing it. Those are all good things to do, but I think that it's inadequate for the problem that we're facing.
Right. I think it's an easy place to stay, but you got to keep doing the work. You have to continue educating yourself. What more can I do? What more can I do? And not just sit back and say, okay, I'm done. I put in my CFLs and I started walking to the grocery store. You're not done. That's a great start, but it's an evolution and it's a constant education. Going to talks like yours, talks like mine, learning what more can I do? What more can I do? Because we have to keep pushing.
Yeah, but I'm tired. Oh, come on. We've been hearing this for so long. You guys are just bullies.
You know? You'll be more tired when you start to live in the environment that we're creating for ourselves.
And okay, so let's make that transition. Although I do want to say one thing that you mentioned in your presentation, that the myth is that climate change and oil depletion will happen gradually and incrementally. And you say we're used to things happening this way. We plan our lives on it. However, it's not the way the world works. For example, there were over 11 million auto accidents in the United States in 2011. Which resulted in 32,000 deaths. None of the people who died or were hurt anticipated their accident or planned for them. Climate change looks to occur as a series of discontinuous events punctuated by relative stability. Explain that.
Okay, so the economy's going along, everything's fine. Then we're building up kind of this problem with home mortgage debt. And then all of a sudden something happens and the economy crashes. Now, it doesn't crash to the ground, but a lot of people's houses are foreclosed. A lot of people are wiped out. And it's been, you know, 4 years now, 5 years almost, that we have sort of just a weak economy and things haven't recovered to where they were. This is the kind of shock that I think will happen. And
repeatedly or?
Repeatedly and continuously. And I think that it's all part of a contraction of the economy. So higher oil prices, problems with food being grown, all of these things will cause shocks to the economy that will damage the economy. And so we'll have these sort of continuous events. We'll recover a little bit from them, and then something else will happen in some other connected part of the economy, and then we'll have a problem there.
I guess you could say like these idiots in Washington who are going to take us to the brink with the debt ceiling in an economy that's already fragile.
Right.
And you make the argument that 2008 was just the beginning, that we will not recover from that, that this is now the new norm.
This is the new norm until something else happens, and then we'll have another shock, and that will be the new norm then. And what are the other shocks that are possible? You know, people owe lots and lots of money on credit cards. That's not secured debt. People owe student loans. Any of those could blow up, or something else. Gas could spike up to $8 a gallon. Any of these things would put sort of an intolerable shock on the economy.
And your point also is that those people who have prepared for this, in that they've put away funds for their retirement, for their kids, whatever. Well, when those shocks happen, that money's gone. Just ask the people who lost a bundle in 2008.
Right.
And that money's gone. And so you're saying you need a new financial model here.
Right. So if you believe that we should have a sustainable world, a sustainable society, then you need to have a sustainable economic system that goes along with it. The problem is that our economic system requires about 2 to 3% growth per year to just sort of stay where it's at. If we have less than 2 to 3% growth a year, we end up with recession. With the price and availability of fossil fuels going down, I believe that we're looking at a contraction of 5 to 10% per year, rather than growth of 2 to 3%. So if you look at the difference between our expectations that we need 2 to 3% positive growth and the fact that the economy is probably going to decline, is actually going to contract, then what that means is that people's investments are in the existing economic system. If the existing economic system is contracting, then people's retirement isn't growing. It's actually being reduced. So you look at what happened to people's 401ks during the, you know, collapse of the housing market. You know, people lost 20-30% of their actual principal that they had saved in the bank. And if the same contraction keeps going on, the same thing's going to happen. And so people are invested in the existing paradigm. They don't have tools, skills. They don't have fertilizer. What they have is an IOU against the existing economy.
You're actually making a really good point. We're getting ahead of ourselves, though, because I want to ask you to pull that microphone just a little bit closer, if you can do that. But that's part, when you say changing paradigm, you're serious. It's not just that we've got to tinker around the edges. It's, you really do need to invest in fertilizer and hardcover books and let's take a quick phone call, because there's just so much my head is going to explode. Let's go to line one and bring Chris from Palatine. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, not too bad, Mike. Winter is back, for at least temporarily, in Chicago. A couple points. Question one, Tom Hartman talks about this periodically, about solar panels. Germany is using and has encouraged its population to put solar panels on the whole rooftops to generate electricity. And he was saying that, because it's been so successful, you know, that they don't have to build you know, power plants, because they're actually, you know, generating the excess amount of energy and sending it back into the grid. You know, wanted to know what your thoughts are about that. And then the other thing, though, here I want to be more of the pessimist. We can do whatever, but we still have two huge countries, China and India, that are polluting their, you know, merry little heads off like it's the 19th century. And aren't what we're doing, you know, what can we do to prevent, you know, them, because it's global, because it's called global, you know, so isn't their pollution really going to affect the climate? And no matter what we do, you know, aren't we just doomed to have that same problem unless they get their act together?
Yeah, I think the problem is that we can't prevent them from doing anything. And so Germany's going to be happily putting in windmills and solar collectors, and China's going to be building one new coal-fired power plant a week. And so what's the net effect of that? It's not less carbon, it's more carbon.
Okay.
But what about the Chris's comment about what's going on in Germany? Why can't that be a model for the rest of the world?
It can be, but remember, the German model comes from German government's decision that we don't have that any oil on German soil. We need to get oil from somewhere. It would make more sense for us to tax ourselves a little bit more to set up a more renewable system. Even so, that's only probably about 30% of their electric. The rest is still coming from gas and oil and coal.
So even Germany's not moving fast enough.
Right. And do we think that in the United States that we're going to be able to get a system through that will, you know, provide the same kind of incentives? We're desperately trying to hold on to the one incentive we have, which is for windmills, for a technology that really makes, you know, kind of complete economic sense. Do we think that somehow we're going to do a big solar program that's going to turn us to a solar country in the next 20 years? It's possible, but I don't see where that's coming from under our current system. Essentially, what I see is that people are asking the government to do something because they actually have the wherewithal to do it. If governments really passed carbon taxes and did all that, we could probably solve this problem.
That would be a really simple way to start, wouldn't it, with a carbon tax?
Yes, that's probably the most straightforward thing. You buy a ton of coal, you get charged $10. The $10 goes towards setting up a renewable energy
system.
But
that's not even being talked about.
That's not even on the legislative agenda, at least in this country.
Yeah. I think I've heard some whisperings, because I went to D.C. in 2009 to lobby for it, and unfortunately that Congress did not get it through. But I have heard some whisperings in D.C. that conversation may be beginning again. Mm-hmm.
Well, so basically, I think people are asking the government to do something because the government has the wherewithal to do it. The problem is the government doesn't have the will to do it, or they don't have the ability to get themselves organized to do it. And, you know, as long as the general public is confused about climate change, the government's not going to all get together and move in one direction.
That's Blake Davis. And thank you, Chris, for the phone call. Always great to hear from you. Blake Davis, adjunct professor of sustainability and urban agriculture at the Illinois Institute of Technology. When we talk about this economic system declining, and at the same time, the climate change in the world, these are interconnected, aren't they? It's not
Yes.
two different things happening.
Right. And I actually think there's three things going on. There's peak oil, which means we have declining energy supplies. There's climate change, which means we're having problems with food and water and all of these things. And I also think we have a strategic material, so food, metals, all of those things. If you try to fix any one of the problems, climate change, that negatively affects the other two things. So what I think the governments are going to do is they're going to define this as an energy problem, and they're going to devote a lot of resources to building windmills and drilling for oil and doing nuclear power. They're going to do all of those things. But the problem is then we'll be running low on copper and silver for solar collectors. And so these kind of, you know, Marshall plans to fix the problem will end up hurting lots of other segments of the economy. So you really have to accept the fact that there's limits. The limits are imposed by the earth and the thermodynamics, and there's no way around that.
All right. We had a caller that has a very simple question, and we should all be asking this, what's the solution? But the solution at this point is pretty complex.
The solution is complex, and I also think you have to look at a set of stages that we're going to go through. So
so you're predicting that over the course of the next 50 years,
right,
that we're going to go in stages about where this planet is headed and where the governments of this planet are headed. Tell you what, it's very interesting. I want to get to that. Let me take a break because right now we're still in the old system, and if I don't make money, I don't get to be here. as I said, Blake Davis from IIT, your calls are welcome at 773-763-9278. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. I don't know how many of you still have your Christmas trees up in your homes, but if you threw it out in the backyard and it's still there, you still have a chance to get it recycled in Chicago and many other municipalities. And until this Friday in Chicago, you can be rewarded for your effort with a bag of tree mulch, courtesy of the Department of Streets and Sanitation in the Chicago Park District. Even if you don't have a tree to recycle, you can pick up this valuable mulch, which you should consider applying around your trees, especially this winter. With the exception of one day this week, it's been pretty dry around here, and applying mulch will help preserve moisture in the soil around your trees and in your gardens. If you don't want to put it around trees, or you don't have a lot of trees. The other thing is, if that tree is in the backyard, the other thing you can do is you can just cut it up and put the boughs on top of your garden. It'll help keep the soil temperatures even. Contact your own municipality to see how long their own programs last and invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
That's the song we're all going to be singing in the future. Blake Davis here from IIT. We are talking about his 50-year survival plan for climate change. All right, we got a couple of calls. We'll get to them in a second, but I want to get to there's what you've discussed is so complex and so interesting. You talk about our system in decline, and that decline is going to happen over, say, the next 50 years or so. Talk us through the stages.
Okay, so the first stage, I think, will take, you know, this is fortune telling, and nobody's going to be perfect at this, but I think for about 10 years, we'll have the fiction of business as usual. So people will still have jobs, energy will be more expensive, but basically everybody's going to live where they're living, do what they're doing as well as they can. During this time period, the government's going to try a lot of things like a big renewable energy program. And by the end of 10 years, essentially what we're going to find out is that this was either ineffective or it didn't work at all. So we're going to do coal gasification and we're going to do carbon sequestration. We're going to try all these things to fix the problem. And essentially, it's going to fail.
Why? Because it's not done on a grand enough scale?
I think because really living at the level of lifestyles that we're living is going to be impossible with the energy resources that we're going to have available.
So it's our consumption.
Right. Right. So
and soon to be consumption of the rest of the world as they attempt to become what we call first world nations.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah. Right. So there's just not going to be enough energy to live the lifestyle that we're living. So if we're not willing to voluntarily choose a simpler, less energy.
And we're not,
then it's going to be brought to us forcibly. And so that's why I don't worry about the political things. And I've been political, small p, big p, my whole life. And I just think that it's too late. What's going to happen is just going to start happening, and we're going to have to deal with it. So the 50-year plan is really, how do you deal with it? And we've always had this idea that, okay, so whatever happens, we're all going to have to get together and go in that direction. And I think that that might be unrealistic at this point. You know, we might have to just look at our own survival and our own family survival and our own community survival and not drag everybody who's disinterested or, you know.
Are you from Idaho?
I am not, and I don't have guns in my house, but.
And you talk about kind of this survival of the fittest. You get into this mentality, not after the first 10 years, but after that.
Right. So
and what scares me about that is that the crazies out there who are screaming and foaming at the mouth about their Second Amendment rights right now are the ones who are going to be in better shape to survive a world like that.
Well, okay. So here's my thoughts on that. I think that the individual survivalist is in a very bad position to actually survive.
Really?
They may survive, you know, zombies coming out of the grave. But we're talking about survival forever, for a long period of time. If you have a gun, you still have to go to sleep sometime. And if you need medical attention, even if you're a doctor, you need somebody else who's a doctor to take care of you if you get sick. So I think we're really talking about surviving as communities. And I think the ideal community sizes are 75 to 125. This is based on some research I've done on the Amish, the Hutterites, some of the other people who live in more sustainable ways than we do. Those size communities can be integrated and they can cooperate with each other to do bigger projects. But that size community seems to be the size community where there's the least social friction and where you need not develop a huge bureaucracy to make all of the community functions work. So things like food, fuel, clothing, I think these are best done at community scales. So the 50-year plan includes a personal what do I do regardless of who I'm with, but it also talks about creating communities, organizations that will also weather this decline in our economic system.
And somebody's way ahead of you or reading your mind. I got a tweet here from Celesta who says, for those living in the suburbs, we are locked into an unsustainable life. And that's kind of key to what you talk about.
Yeah, so I see the meta problems with what we're doing is actually threefold. One is that most of our wealth is invested in the wrong things. And I already kind of mentioned most of our wealth is in IOUs to a system that I don't think is going to be particularly healthy when we need to cash those IOUs in. We're also living in the wrong type of structures and in the wrong places. So something like 57% of the people in the United States live in the suburbs. Suburbs are tremendously wasteful in terms of energy. You're required to have a car to go everywhere. And I don't think that structure is going to last. We're going to need to figure out what to do about that. And finally, the last thing is that most people don't have any skills or knowledge that they need for absolute survival. They don't know how to get water. They don't know how to grow their own food. They don't know how to make their own clothes. We're all part of these giant, complex, expert-run systems that require lots and lots of energy. You reduce the amount of energy they have available. All of a sudden, there's nobody that comes and picks up the garbage every day.
I'm a radio guy, okay? I do know how to grow my own food, thank goodness, but that's about it. So otherwise, I'm kind of a barnacle on the hull of society here.
I'll sell your clothes and you grow my food. Deal?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, yeah. See, and that's how we start pulling the community
together,
right?
And that's
how
we start to develop a community. And I think that the real issue is that individuals can actually make those 180-degree changes that we're trying to get the government to make. And I don't think the government can make those 180-degree changes. But if you want to walk out of this building today and go live in India and, be at the foot of a Maharaji, you can get on a plane and do that. You can make that 180-degree change in your lifestyle, and you could do it tomorrow if you want to.
But you say in a few years, we won't be able to get on a plane and go anywhere.
Right. I'm actually in the process of writing a book, and I have a chapter called Flying to Mecca. And I compare using a plane as the same kind of thing, a once-in-a-lifetime thing, as going to Hajj, because of the amount of fuel that you use, the amount of carbon that you emit on any kind of airplane flight. And I think it's something that your children will not do that you do, that you have done and that you can do now. Your children will not do it.
So get those plane rides in now and go to Paris tomorrow, because you're never going to see the Eiffel Tower.
You may never see the Eiffel Tower in 2030.
Don't worry. There's one in Disney World. It's just as good. So what about the rest of technology? One of the things you mentioned in this, and for folks, for listening, and I'm going to get to those calls, and they are coming in, that this sounds like doomsday scenario. This is Blake's idea. This is where we could go if we don't act. And it might happen. And I'm condensing a lot of things in a very short time here in an hour. But you do mention technology, preserving technology for future generations. And I was thinking about that after I looked at your PowerPoint. What could I save? If I were thinking of the technology I wanted to preserve, it would be solar, I would think, so, because then you can power an individual piece of equipment.
Or small hydro
or something like that. What about this technology? If we don't have a large power grid, a lot of the stuff we count on now, cell phones and computers and stuff, would become marginal, right?
Right. And if you think about all the technology, all of it's in a big infrastructure. The infrastructure is very energy dependent. There's a big facility that used to print all the phone books down on the south side of Chicago, Donnelly Printing. It's being turned into a server farm for all of these internet providers. Well, it's taking as much energy as a small city in the United States. Think about all the clean rooms that we have just to make things like hard disks and cell phones. Those are extremely expensive. We have hundreds of those across the country. Let's say energy doubled in price, which I don't think is unrealistic in the next 10 years. We're going to have to make decisions about where we want that to go. Do we want cheap hard drives, or do we want solar collectors so we have energy in our houses to use the hard drives? We're going to have to make those decisions. Everything is dependent on this infrastructure, and all of us for our basic needs are dependent on infrastructure. And I think we need to step away from the door. We need to just move back a little bit and say, what can I do to be more self-reliant? Because I may have to be more self-reliant in the future.
I got to tell you, and Sarah, you probably noticed this, that Twitter is exploding with comments. If you have any of the good ones here, feel free to pop them in, because I can't see all of them. But one of the first ones I see is, does your guest have an opinion about where in the world is the best place to live when we start our 75 people communities?
Yes, I do. And actually, I think that you should start building the skills and developing the communities in this sort of short term, which I say is about 10 years. So I wouldn't move any place now. If I was in Phoenix, I would say, yeah, okay, there's not going to be any water here. You definitely need to move. The Midwest is still going to be maybe not the breadbasket of the world, but it's still going to have productive agricultural resources. We still have fresh water in the Great Lakes.
And it's getting lower and lower every day.
Although it's getting lower and lower. So I think Chicago might be a place where you kind of commit to your community, you dig in, you develop the resources and the people around you to help you do it. I would say that you do need to keep your eye on the long term. So if you're looking at the long term, that's probably sometime after 30 years. So 30 years from now, it'll be more clear how fast climate is changing and how extreme the variation is going to be. At that point, you might want to consider moving further north. So we're talking maybe northern Ontario and Canada.
Because that climate will have changed.
That climate will have changed, but it will have improved over what it is. So it'll be more like the climate that we have in Chicago
right
now.
So what we need to do is launch an invasion of Canada so we control that country.
Okay, so you know what we do on the Mexican border? I wouldn't be surprised if in 30 years that's what the Canadians are doing on the southern border of Canada, trying to keep Americans from getting into Canada.
Oh, I love it. Turnabout is fair play.
Fair play,
oh,
absolutely. Yeah. That's right. There'll be those wetbacks from New York and Chicago. And
oh, my gosh. Oh, dear. So that's 30 years down the road. And until then, folks need to make decisions about what it is they think is important for society.
Right. So I think we have 10 years in which there'll be at least the fiction that life goes on exactly the way it is now. Our lifestyle keeps slipping, but we're going to get back in the saddle again, just kind of like the way people talk about the economy. We're just waiting for it to come back. After 10 years, it's going to be obvious it's not coming back, and then people are going to make more dramatic lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think that people are going to do is they're going to move back to the cities. And the reason is because the cities actually operate more efficiently. They use energy more efficiently. You have enough density so that you have big, huge blocks of apartments that are much more efficient than a whole bunch of separate individual houses sitting in the suburbs. You also have the access to public transportation. If gas is $10 a gallon, nobody's going to be driving their car for anything that they absolutely don't need to drive it for. And so being in the city where you're a block or two from some type of public transportation is going to be a very efficient system, and people are going to move to the city for that reason. The problem is that by 30 years out, the energy supplies are going to keep declining, and even though the cities are the most efficient places to live, they're still not going to be able to get the resources they need, and therefore they will start to collapse just from lack of resources. So they'll be the most efficient way to live, but they won't have enough resources to maintain that sort of efficient lifestyle. And then you probably need to look at moving someplace where you're closer to agricultural resources. And so then maybe you're really looking about going back to the land.
Let me ask you a question. I mentioned earlier, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but not necessarily so, that an entity like The Plant could become the focal point of civilization because it's self-sustaining.
Anything that's self-sustaining will be good. In the city, we have 70,000 vacant lots. Right now, they're an eyesore. They're a social problem. Those are all productive assets we just haven't used yet. We haven't started to use. We've got millions of square feet of buildings that could be turned into vertical farms. All of this is going to be, you know, all this is money into the bank for people who do it, so that when we get to that point where it's hard or it's expensive to get food from someplace else, we have a source of it right here in the city. And it may sound like I'm depressed, but I'm not depressed. I'm working on the plant. I'm helping people build greenhouses. There's lots of work to be done. But I think there's a lot of people who just want to deny that there's a problem. And so if you keep denying that there's a problem, you won't do anything to start the solution. I know there's a problem, so I can work on the solution.
You know, there are people listening now who are saying, that guy's crazy. Well, he doesn't know anything. All right. I mean, he's only a professor at IIT, but that guy's crazy. There's a lot of crazy smart people out there. And that's what you're dealing with.
Right. And you know, like I said, you know, I don't think everybody's going on this voyage together. The last time the Earth was sustainable was sometime around when we started the steam age. We were working on wood. The wood had to grow. So we were sustainable. At that point, we had 1 billion people. We have over 7 billion now. We're probably on our way to 8.5 billion people. Without all of this stored fossil fuels that we're using to support the carrying capacity for all these 8 billion people, we don't have all those people. Somebody's got to go.
Okay. We have a bunch of phone calls. We're going to get to those. That is Blake Davis, 50-year survival plan for climate change. Wow, the phones have lit up. The Twitter's lit up. I knew this would happen. That's kind of why I was looking forward to this show. We'll be right back with him in just a second.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too. Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
See, I had to play some peppy music because I'm so depressed right now that we'll play against the tone of the show here. Blake Davis from IIT is here in the studio. We're talking about the 50-year survival plan for climate change, a talk he did at the Bioneers Conference in November. And you are putting a book out about this?
Yes, I'm working on a book right now.
Okay. Well, you get back to me when we do that book. Let's go to the phones. And Mike in Waukegan, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi. You know, I want to ask the professor this. You know, according to my sources, approximately two-thirds of the Earth's foliage has been destroyed since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. And it seems to me like even if we were to quit adding carbon to the atmosphere, there's still that fact. In other words, the Earth is a third as healthy as it was before that, you know, up until that period. And why don't we do more to, and this is the key operative word here, to plant vast numbers of trees and also other plants that can add a lot of oxygen into the atmosphere due to their highly foliant ability, you know, something like, for example, industrial cannabis hemp. I don't understand. This to me seems like something we can do. You know, like I know we can't, you know, quit driving the cars and shutting down the power plants and all that. But it seems like we can do that. So I don't understand why we aren't pursuing that.
That's a great question, Mike.
Obviously a great idea. The problem is, if you look at the amount of deforestation in the rainforest and other places in the world, we're not even anywhere near keeping up with the amount that's being destroyed every year. So how do we get, you know, governments and businesses and the people who operate at that scale to do the good things? And that's the problem. And I don't think we can get them to do it. And so I'm trying to suggest other ways that people can take action that'll make a difference.
Mike, I'm going to bring in some more people. Thank you. That's a great question. I'm trying to get as many as I can because a lot of people are interested. Let us go to Alan in Lake Bluff. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi. Yes. There's so many topics involved with this, and it's to sum it up, you could almost talk about the fact that we've got a very simple math problem here. We have a finite Earth. And we've got infinite expansion as far as population, and we have an irrelevant economic system because there's no accurate pricing model. And as far as you go, unless you can turn it into money, we can't get our message out.
Yeah, and I think you're just Blake. He's just proving your point, right?
Yep. There's a lot of people that would be afraid for everybody to recognize the seriousness of the situation. If you're selling energy, obviously you want to keep selling energy. If you're an environmental organization, you don't want people to head for the hills and stop working towards your goals. So I think the first thing is really to recognize the seriousness of the problem. And then I'd like to at least say this is one way you can go about trying to protect yourself and your communities. There may be lots of other ones, but at least I'm putting forward one that people can do, and then we go from there and people can riff on that. It's kind of like the plant. We wanted to show an actual working example, not an artist rendering, but something people could come and touch and say, okay, I know I can do that.
Alan, thank you so much. Great comment. Let's go to Dan in Chicago. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. I think I've been working on ways of tying together the different themes, and it always seems to come down to economies of scale, of local efficiencies, of where to use them. And of course, the big corporate industrial models are efficiencies of scale. But the place to start with in terms of what you're working with is the energy that comes from the sun. I'm quoting this from the preface to the book on alcohol biofuel, which I've brought up a couple of times. All of the Earth's operational energy, this is by Buckminster Fuller, comes from the sun, from the stars. The 200 million square mile surface is always there. It's always sunlit. That fabulous untapped amounts of energy are coming every second. Coal and oil, if that theory is correct, is based on the historic sunlight and using that up, if that's how it's made. But at any rate, the amount of energy, if that's computed just in terms of biofuels, the computations by the an underread book that Tom Hartman said should be read by everybody, called Alcohol Can Be a Gas.
Well, remember what profit actually is. In the world up until 300 years ago, profit was turning the power of the sun through plants into things people could use. That was the profit. How efficient you were doing that was the amount of profit you made. We have to get back to that because profit now is completely devoid of the meaning that it used to have, which meant you're actually creating things from sunlight that we can use.
I want to thank you, Dan, for that. I want to have enough time to get to line 11 because Rick DeMille is has called back. I knew you would, pal.
Yeah, I know. You know what, Mike? Longtime listener, first time caller. But I just wanted to say, Professor Blake, have you ever heard of the book The Green Metropolis, written by David Owen?
I have. Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book, and I really urge, Mike, all your listeners to buy a copy. It's a simple read. It may take, you know, a couple of days to go through it, but it really talks a lot about what Mr. Davis is saying about how urban environments generally tend to be more efficient with their usage of energy. And I'm just going to put this real quickly because I know you want to get to a couple of maybe callers here to finish up. But when I was down at the conference in Austin, Texas, the state climatologist was talking about how a bill that took almost 3 years to finally get kicked down the road through the Texas state legislature, was held up because a couple of groups came out, and he had actually showed video to the crowd, the attendees, and had a person stand up and say, this was a think tank, said, God did not create people to use the earth. God created the earth for people to use. And think about that. If you have people that are able to get into the Texas State House and profess those beliefs, how much work do we have to do just to get that particular type of thinking turned in a way that can actually be useful as opposed to be detrimental?
Talk to you next week. Thanks for that comment. What do you got to say about that, Blake? We have about 30 seconds.
Okay. I agree. I think that we look for governments, we look to businesses because big, they have those economies of scale to do it. And so we need to find other ways to do it.